Broadcasting live from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette. 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome into Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. On this laced with anger Thursday morning. Footnotes. I am so numb to the disgusting performance again all season long against bad teams. And yet so angry at what I saw last night in the ineptitude of the decision-making. It's one thing to hit terrible, and they're hitting terrible. They're paying the piper. I mean, you never want to break records. Like, on Saturday, they broke an all-time record for consecutive games scoring at least three runs. What have they done in the four games since breaking that record? They've scored under three runs three times in four games. You never want to break records. You never want to score too many runs, ever. You never want to break records. You don't want to win big awards. You don't want to do any of that stuff. It's not good. Because at some point, you got to pay the piper. And boy, are they paying right now. Unbelievable. It is what took place last night, in my mind, is absolutely inexcusable. Ineptitude. And look, I've been a dusty guy. I never know. You never really know. And I really think that a veteran pitching coach is as highly respected as the Astros is. He's probably making the call. We can fuss. Maybe it's a collaborative effort. Maybe it's not. You never really. Maybe some nights, you know, one of them is feel strong among themselves. Whoever. The coach's decision / manager's decision here is inexcusable. The Astros struggling, obviously, all year long. You know, Orioles, you know, five games in Houston and swept the Astros, and it wasn't even competitive. Was not even competitive. The Tigers came to Houston, swept the Astros. The series wasn't even competitive. It looked like a whole team against a major league team. Didn't even compete with the Orioles or the Tigers. Could not even compete with them. Now, they've competed in these three losses to the Royals, but you're struggling. You got, you know, DL guys. You got COVID guys and all of this, and you got some who haven't played in months and it looks like they're ever going to play. So you make a decision in this, what, seventh inning? You make a good decision. You pinch hit Jason Castro, who's been playing very well of late. Now, for a long time, he got off to a great start offensively. He went into a massive slump, and he's been having a lot of good at-bats lately. So it's two outs. What is it? Two outs, bases loaded, two outs, two on, something like that. I think it's bases loaded. He comes in the seventh. They pinch hit Castro for Candy. Great move. And then moves are not good based on whether they work or not. A move is good before you know the result. A move is not good or bad based on if it works. Like the example I always give, you can try to cross Johnson Street at 5 o'clock on a weekday with a blindfold on, and you might make it across the road, but that doesn't make it a good move. It's an awful move whether you make it across without getting hit or not. It's still awful. So, pinch hitting Castro was the right decision to make. Does it, even if he struck out on three pitches, it was still the right decision to make. Now, Castro came through, got a two-run single, gave you a 2-1 lead. Before the minute I saw the ball in the outfield, I knew it was two outs, so they would both score. I said, put in Graveman. Now. N-O-W, you moron. Now. Not second guess. If Kendall Graveman came in the seventh and gave up 74 runs to break an all-time record for the worst pitching performance in Major League Baseball history, it would still be the right move. What in the world are you putting a donkey in after you finally got the lead? Understand. Repeat after me. Blake Taylor is a donkey. Brooks is a donkey. Saying that for months, they have to get a left-hander. They have to get a left-hander. They have to get a left-hander. I don't know why they think Blake Taylor and Brooks Raley are good left-handers. They are not. And they better if they get to the postseason, which is not looking all that great anymore. I mean, a really good chance of getting to the postseason, but it's nowhere near the mortal lock. They don't learn how to beat teams with sub-500 records. It's impossible. It'll be absolutely impossible to make the playoffs if they don't learn how to beat a team with a sub-500 record. It's mathematically impossible. They won't even be close to the playoffs. So he pitched. Well, the problem with that is they have this new rule that if you put Blake Taylor in the game, he's got to pitch to three batters unless he finishes the inning. So the absolute worst thing you could do is, well, not the worst because he outdid himself. They outdid themselves. They put Blake Taylor in and he gets lit because he's a donkey. Okay. I'm not saying you can't have Blake Taylor on your team, but that is not the situation to put him in. You finally got the lead. You're struggling. Seems like you ain't won a game in a month. You need this win. You don't trust Blake Taylor. You put Graveman in who ain't pitched in a week. So not only pitch Blake Taylor three pitches, let him give up the lead, and then take him out. Then they bring Kendall Graveman in. Well, it's too late now. And what makes it even worse, Kendall Graveman pitched an inning and two-thirds. He got five outs. Why don't you bring him in to start the seventh? Pitch the seventh. If he can get five out, if you're willing to pitch him for five outs, why give up the lead and pitch a donkey first? Listen, Dusty's supposedly old school. This is old school. How do you get momentum all game? Those people, longtime baseball, maybe you can learn something here. And maybe supposed old timers like Dusty need to be reminded. How do you get momentum in a baseball game? You score a run and then put up a zero in the next inning. That's how you get momentum. You don't have until you can, when you score a run, then you have to put up a zero in the next inning. Then you have momentum. So who do you start the seventh inning with? Graveman. Not a donkey. So he starts it. He still pitches Graveman five. Look, if you want to only get him, pitch him five outs. Outs. Let Graveman get him out in the seventh and get an out or two in the eighth. Then bring the donkey in. He only has to pitch to one batter. He gets out of the inning. Then you could pitch your closer, Presley in the an abomination. What an inept job of using your pitchers. Unbelievable. I mean, the ultimate slap in the face is he still pitched an inning and two-thirds, but he pitched the wrong inning and two-thirds. I would have disagreed if they'd have brought some other donkey in to finish the seventh, even though that would have been stupid too, but at least it would have made sense. You would have been, okay, I'm sticking to my guns. I'm only pitching him one inning. I'm only pitching him. He's my eighth inning pitcher. I'm pitching him in the eighth inning. I would have disagreed. I would have been angry. But at least it would have made some sense. I could have understood. He's the eighth inning guy. He's pitching him in the eighth. Sticking with his guns. Playing for the whole season. Not for one game. Would have been the wrong decision. But it would have at least made sense. Well, the way they played it out, they still pitched him over two innings. He still pitched. Got five outs, but you did it in an order where it didn't even matter because you still lost the game. He pitched the wrong five innings. He got the wrong five outs. You start the seventh with him. You don't let a donkey come in. And again, if Blake Taylor would have come in and got everybody out that he faced, it would still been the wrong decision. Unbelievable. Unbelievable ineptness. That is an inexcusable decision. Inexcusable. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. We'll take a commercial break. Try to calm down. We'll be talking Saints with Ralph Marlboro next. Stay tuned on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from a First South Farm Credit Studio. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS Fiber. Our special guest. Want to remind you, go to our website, 103.7 The Game, Astro Weekend Getaway 5, the last one, Angels Astros playing the weekend of September 9th through 11th. You can attend one of those games with four free tickets, as well as a $200 Visa gift card. Brought to you by Butcher Air Conditioning, JJ Exterminating, and 103.7 The Game. But you have to sign up to win, so go to 103.7thegame.com. All right, it's time to talk Saints football with Ralph Marlboro.
Kevin Foote is fired up and is ready to talk all things black and gold with Going Long with Luke Johnson here on Footnotes.
No, not Luke. It's Ralph. And Ralph, my Astros are about to put me into an emotional breakdown, so I figured it was time to steady the game and talk Saints. How are you, sir?
Like 45% more attractive. I feel good about it. I'm younger too.
Yeah,
I'm younger. And you do amazing work, Kevin. You really are a doctor.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I had a doctor, a prescription to prescribe what's wrong with the Astros right now.
My wife is able. She watches the Astros in a way that is really unhealthy. She treats the Astros game like the Saints game. So she has this intensity for 160 that I just... So this four-game losing streak is just intolerable. She wants to throw everyone off a bridge.
Well, I'm the same way, and I don't treat every game like that, but when you're heading south and you make bonehead decisions, they did last night, Blake Taylor in the seventh after finally getting the lead, I just lost it. So, yeah, me and your wife would have an interesting conversation. Nice to hear that someone else is doing the same thing I am.
That's right. She hates the she hates everyone in the bullpen. Everyone. Like, and you, she doesn't want to hear about your advanced stats, your whip, your loaded bat. Like, none of it. She doesn't want to hear any of it. She doesn't give a you know what about advanced stats. She's like, I know in my heart he's terrible. That's what I know.
The other thing that drives me crazy sometimes is so-and-so hit the ball 102 miles an hour. Who cares? He made it out. It doesn't help me right now.
Like, oh, he hit it 400 miles an hour, but the guy caught it. His hand is shattered into 1,000 pieces. But, like,
All right, so I'm trying to survive the day. And so before we get to some bigger picture things, I want to bounce a few names and subjects that I keep reading off of you. One is, please tell me, all these articles and comments I keep reading that Latavius Murray's job is on the line and that he might get cut is not true. What do you think on that?
I think it's possible because Latavius Murray, they clear out like $2 million of cap space if they get rid of him. I think it's possible, but unlikely, just because he has sort of over time gained Sean Payton's trust, and he had a fumble last week. But I think it's unlikely, but I wouldn't rule it out, because the thing is, like, Latavius Murray, this is his last year with the Saints, regardless of what. He's over 30 going to be gone. I will say, Devon looked completely washed. Like, that dude, he's not making this roster. I think they may turn for another running back. So,
well, and again, I'm fine with Tony Jones, and I liked what he did too, but you can't put Tony Jones in the Murray role right now with all the other transitions that this team is going through, especially on offense, with quarterback and wide receiver issues, etc. How can you add to your transition by saying, I'm not going to trust a guy in Murray who's been incredibly consistent? We're going to put a rookie in that, or essentially a rookie in his role.
Well, no, that's why I think they would do it. The only cap fee is, you know, if a team gets injured at running back, right, and, because we're getting late in the game, right, we have this week and then next week, and you have a little break, and you go to week one. If a team has a running back gets injured, right, I could 100% see the Saints going, hey, Giants, or, you know, not Saquon Barkley or whatever, but a random team saying, hey, you got a wide receiver that's your third wide receiver or fourth wide receiver. Do you want Latavius Murray? Because you don't have a running back anymore. Like, I could see them being willing to deal Latavius Murray before I could see them cutting him, if that makes sense.
Right. Shy Tuttle, when we heard the news, I call him Gus by nickname, Onyemata Gus, because he came from another country, didn't know anything about football, enough to remember the Disney movie Gus the Kicking Mule, who came from out of the country, did football, and then made a big impact. So anyway, so when we found out Gus is going out for 6 weeks, everyone said, well, you got Shy Tuttle. Me, I've heard a lot about Roach. I've heard a lot about Ringo. I've heard a lot about Dalton. I've heard a little bit about Hudson. I haven't heard hardly anything about Shy Tuttle, and I don't think I saw him until the second half. Is that just he's in and so we don't need him, or has he been passed up by some of these other guys?
All right, I'm gonna steal some stuff from my co-host Andrew Juge, because he really watches that preseason film in a way that's probably unhealthy. Like, I watch preseason games, I'll watch it back with like a clicker in my hand and, like, you know, but studies it and breaks it down. And his thing with Shy Tuttle was he looks a little injured. Like, he kind of described it on the podcast, and I noticed too. Like, he's kind of like walking with a waddle, and he kind of has that Cam Jordan deal from, remember at the end of 2019 when Cam Jordan, when he had like the groin ripped off his bone, you have the surgery after, and you're like, what's wrong with him? So Shy Tuttle, he's not playing good, Kevin. He was getting pushed around a little bit in that fourth quarter, which is a concern. If he's healthy and getting pushed around, that's a really, really good one. But I looked at that again when Andrew pointed it out. I look at him, I think something's not right with him physically, because he doesn't look like a guy that's not trying. He doesn't look like the same guy that was so.
But why would they put him out there if he's healthy? If he's not healthy, why would they put him out there not healthy? That's strange.
Well, so he's not a guy that has a secure roster spot, though, right? Like, I feel like his roster spot is a little bit delicate and not necessarily locked in. He may be trying to fight through it. All I can film tells me he doesn't look the same as he did before. Like and it's not like his body's the same. He's just not playing as well. He just doesn't look. He doesn't look the same for me. And it's the defensive tackle is. Well, this is going to be interesting to me, Kevin, because you'll probably laugh at me, but I think Jacksonville Monday is a much, much better test for the Saints than Baltimore, because Baltimore, they didn't play Lamar Jackson. They didn't play a bunch of starters. They've been a playoff team the last 2 years. They're sort of even through. I think Jacksonville, they're going to play Lawrence. I think they're going to play their starters a good bit. And I think this is going to be a really interesting test for the Saints, especially their run defense, which, by the way, was really good against Baltimore and kept them from getting just, when you turn the ball over six times, I don't care what game it is, Baltimore should have been in that preseason game. And they didn't because the Saints runs up. So I'm really curious to see if the run defense can hold together. And so far after 1 week against Baltimore, I'm encouraged. I'm still very worried about defensive tackle, but I saw some things Saturday that gave me hope.
All right, another player I was a concern with, but now I'm a little more concerned with, is Brian Poole. How does he fit into this picture?
I mean, the thing with him, he's a really good player. Like, he was really good with the Jets. It was kind of comical. You know, I went back, and for people that have, like, NFL Game Pass, they probably notice you can, like, search players, and you can be like, I just want to see this player, and you can they do the cut-ups for you. He looked like, this is not an exaggeration, right? He was, like, the only competent person in the Jets' entire defense. Like, they had guys going this way, going that way. He looked like he was the only person that had any clue of what he was doing. And I think he's going to be a really nice fit for the Saints. Now, is he going to be great? No. But I think he's definitely an upgrade in the slot as to Patrick Robinson, who retired. I know they were thinking of playing him outside, but when they originally brought him back in 2018, they wanted him to be in the slot. I think Poole is going to be an upgrade over him potentially. He's older and got hurt last year, and that's the reason why he was on the street for so long. Kevin, I like where their defense is. My concerns for this team are their whole season to me is going to be, the success of it is going to be, they're going to still be a top five defense, and they're going to have this awesome offensive line, and they're going to run the ball. But when you play that way, and you know this, when you decide to play that grind them out defensive style, your kicker becomes absolutely critical, because you're going to be in these one score games, and you got to, when your offense isn't great, you got to have that kicker bang in those 3 42-yard field goals, right? So you're not losing 14-0; you're only losing 14-9. They literally do not have a kicker right now, so that is it doesn't seem like a big deal, but to me, it is a huge deal, because we could be there in October and being like, you could be talking to me, and I could be like, Kevin, they, instead of being 2-4, they should be 4-2. But they just have incompetence at kicker, and he missed two extra points, and it's driving me nuts.
Okay, well, see, two things that a lot of media portrayed as negative, I think were very positive. One, Patrick Robinson retiring is a positive, because it's never good to have a bad player on your team, ever. So I think that was a positive. I did not want Mayer. I don't know why they signed Mayer. I was very concerned that he didn't kick, and then we later found out why he didn't kick, so that was good news. To me, it's 2 + 2 = 4. They got to sign Jake Verity when the Ravens cut him.
Right? See, question, though, and we said this on, me and Andrew said this on the podcast last night, I think the Saints need to make a double trade for the Baltimore. They need to send Baltimore a fifth round and say, Baltimore, we want Verity, and we want Willie Snead. Who says no? And here's the reason why. If there's another team that needs a kicker, and they're in front of the Saints in the claim line, because remember, the claim line for the waiver wire is off of last year.
Right.
So the Saints are claiming 26 or 20. So there's a chance that, like, they may have to do something and say, we want Verity, we got to give you a conditional seventh. Like, I'm not saying that 100%. I mean, the Saints would know it more than me because I don't follow every team. So I don't know if there's a team out there that's having a kick and battle, having a, you know, that sort of thing. But it's something to consider when you're that far down.
Oh, no, and I agree with you. And I agree with you. It is that important. Absolutely, absolutely correct. All right, one more question before we go to the break. I saw a lot of people or some people suggesting he might actually play corner. So after watching the game the other night, it seems like he's going to be playing the same role as last year. Is that what you see?
I see it. I see it that way. Because the thing is, I don't think the Saints want to move him because he's so good in this. Like, why would you take a guy that's doing great work and ask him to do something that you think that he's not as good at, right? I only move Chauncey Gardner, and I think we discussed this maybe not the last time I was on, but previously. I think they're only going to move Chauncey Gardner Johnson outside out of desperation, where they'll say, listen, we have to play him outside because he's terrible there. And he's not ideal. He doesn't have the ideal height. But whatever. Our number two corner is getting burned to the ground every week. We have to change it up. It's sort of like the offensive line where, not in the last couple of years because they haven't had that many injuries, but I want to say in like 2014, 2015, the Saints had a bunch of injuries on the offensive line. And they just reshuffled the whole thing. And Sean Payton was like, we're just going to get our best five guys. And he says that consistently now. But I think it's the same thing. If Chauncey Gardner-Johnson is playing outside, I think we're not going to like it because it means something has gone horribly wrong. They've reached desperation times at corner.
I agree. All right, we'll take a commercial break. One more question about defense on the other side, and then we'll get to the offensive side, which is the real problematic issue. More like, you know, Astros bullpen kind of stuff. So we'll take a commercial break. We'll be back with Ralph Marlboro from Saints Happy Hour Podcast next, 103.7 The Game. Oh, welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote, 103.7 The Game. I got a little reprieve tonight, tonight, because today you can hear the Astros against the Royals at 1:10 right here on 103.7 The Game. So I don't have to go from being totally upset and getting really mad in the evening. I'll have a few hours to get over their latest loss to a sub-500 team, but you can listen to that game. One first pitch, 103.7 The Game. All right, we're speaking with Ralph Marlboro about the Saints. From the Saints Happy Hour podcast. And I want to be, well, let me get my last defensive question before we get to the offense. My biggest criticism of the defense is that, as I've said, they've believed for the last 5 or 6 years that the season starts in October, not actually in September. And so, from what you saw the other night and what we heard Malcolm Jenkins say and the progress that we've seen in all these areas, is there a reason to believe that they might actually start playing good defense in September instead of waiting till October?
God, I hope so. You know, the ones that, you know, I think it's a problem league-wide, too. I just think, Kevin, with the off-season, the way you can't do as much off-season work, you can't have as much mini camp, you can't have as much on-field stuff, you can't have as much hitting and training camp. I think these teams, even though they don't want to, September, they're still working through stuff. And the thing with the Saints is they don't have Drew to sort of cover it up and help them along, right? This defense has got to go out the gate. Like, because if you even like lean, right, their defense, Fitzmagic shredded them.
Oh.
And then they started 3-1 because the Cleveland kicker missed like 1,000 field goals.
Right.
Drew was amazing against Atlanta, and they sort of just worked through it and they were winning games. But, you know, a lot of it because of Drew, he led a great drive against Cleveland and they won in overtime. They don't have that luxury. So, like, they have got to come out of the gate on defense. The one thing that I'm impressed with this defense because we know the Saints offensive line is good, right? We know it's rated by, I forget the guy who rates all the offensive line. He rated the Saints the best. So we know it's elite. We know it's one of the best, whether you think it's 1-2. The thing that gives me hope about this defense is the defensive line, they don't have good days every day. best offensive line in football in your day, they're winning some days. And I'm going to tell you, you know, I was Pittsburgh the other day, and I was like, you know, Davenport, hopefully he just had a rest day yesterday, but he's been looking great. And somebody was like, well, it's just against Hurst. He's a backup tackle. What does that matter? And I told him, I was like, listen, Hurst is a really good backup tackle for the Saints. Davenport is going to have weeks where he's going to play dudes that are like Garrison, that are like Hurst, you know, James
right.
Hurst. And he's going to destroy them if camp is any indication. And the defensive line is so good. Peyton practicing like, and we're not even, we're like, they got Granderson, they got, you know, Cam Jordan. So they got options. The one thing is, if they can get a pass rush, that can cure, you know this, it can cure almost anything. Bad linebackers, doesn't matter. Our pass rush kills the quarterback. That doesn't matter. Our pass rush kills the quarterback. Like, they can, if they can get a pass rush, and I think they will, I'm going to go on record, I think they're going to have more sacks than they had last year, even though they lost Hendrickson, even though, you know, Sheldon Rankins wasn't really a part of what they did. He's sort of overrated by the national media as a loss. But I think they're going to get more last year. Linebacker, and they're deeper at end, and I think they're going to be better there.
I absolutely agree, and I'm going to push all that depth off to the next time we start. All right, side. Should I be worried about Traquan and all the missed time, or do you think okay? And what makes me think that they think, other than Kevin White, they haven't really brought in anybody.
No, you need to. They're terrible. They are. Peyton is making that build, making that wide receiver room uncomfortable. They were very, very displeased about what they saw from receivers on Saturday, and that's why they're bringing all these dudes in. And when you are bringing in Kevin White, by the way, Kevin White is the biggest bust of the 2015 NFL draft. It's not even close. And he's never been healthy. He's never proven he can do anything in the NFL. Their receivers are bad. And I think they're looking. I think, Kevin, you probably would disagree, Andrew, on the podcast, I think they're a bad week away. Like, if their receivers don't improve against Jacksonville, I think they're going to do something at wide receiver. Just a major move, but they're going to do something, a trade or claim or sign up for their wide are, to me, they're borderline behind Callaway. They're borderline not functional in the NFL. We don't know if Jordan can do it in the NFL, even consistently average. Traquan, same thing. I think their receivers are a mess.
But
and
do you think Traquan
backs aren't separating
themselves. But do you think hurt, or do you think, I mean, because he's missed a lot of time, or do you think he's going to at least be healthy is what I'm trying to
say. I think he'll be healthy. I'm just not like, I just don't believe in the Traquan Smith sort of, Jameis is going to make him great. I don't see that. I see their receivers as a huge problem. You know, they're going to have to do something, but there's things that can be done and there's things that can be schemed. My worry is like the difference between Callaway, who's probably a good number two receiver, right? Difference between him and everyone else, it's like the Grand Canyon, Kevin.
Yeah.
So I just, for him, just put Marquez Callaway, put him in bubble wrap, let him sit on the sideline, and let him sip on the Gatorade, let him have a lollipop. Like, he doesn't need to play anymore in these last two games.
No,
that's
with
my
you. All right, we got to get to quarterback. We don't have time to go too much into this, but are you buying all this? Like, this Ian Book talk is driving me crazy. Like,
no.
I mean, what are people talking?
Like,
I've seen by midseason. Like, what am I even hearing?
If Ian Book is starting games for the Saints, is off the rails, in the ditch, on fire, and there's casualties. All right, like, that's just the bottom line. Because if he's starting early in the year, that means they've had massive quarterback injuries. If he's starting late, that means the Saints are like 2-10 and are like, we're giving up on this thing. We're just going to play Ian Book, see if he's any good, and we're not going to ruin this draft position by winning some meaningless games. And the thing is, like, I saw him on Saturday. I didn't see a darn thing that made me think, oh, he's good.
I wasn't
against the pick. Like, I know people hated the pick. I'm like, whatever. Saints want to take a flyer on a quarterback, cool. But I didn't see anything that made me think he's anywhere near ready to start an NFL game.
I agree. All right. The other thing that hit me, I think for the first time, just because I've always been so against the entire concept, that hit me for the first time, I think it's even possible. And I'm not talking about his Batman role that he's played in the past. Do you think it's possible that Sean Payton is considering some modified two-quarterback system goes on? I'm not talking about injuries, and I'm not talking about playing Batman role here and there like he did with Drew. I'm talking about some sort of two-quarterback system.
100%. 100%. And here's why. And I don't have any inside information. Here's why. Peter King, in 2018, the Saints let him sort of embed with them, like the week of the game and the night before the game, and they were going to plan, and they wanted to run that trick play, the three quarterback play, and somebody in the room was like, I don't know if we can have three quarterbacks on the field, and I think Sean Payton or Pete Carmichael was like, we can do whatever we want. And when I read that, I was like, that means Sean Payton, he does not care about your norms and the media. He will do, Kevin, whatever it to win against Green Bay. If he thinks he's playing Taysom Hill 35% of the time and in the red zone, he will do it. I think the way this quarterback competition is going, I think Jameis is slightly ahead, but he's not separating himself. We can argue, is that because of receivers? Is that because Jameis is still Jameis? It's hard to know. But I think if you don't separate themselves that great in training camp, why wouldn't you play both of them? Now, maybe it's like 70-30 or whatever. You drop a Taysom. Why wouldn't you drop Green Bay? Why would Taysom series against Green Bay where you're running the read option and you're doing all kinds of crazy things, and maybe you catch Green Bay with their pants down in points? You know, I 100% believe that is on the table.
I don't believe it, but after watching that game, it hit. This is very real. All right, well, 2 weeks, we'll know a whole lot more about the Saints, and I appreciate it. You calm me down a little bit, so thank you very much, and tell your wife I'm with her, okay? Tell her I'm with her so she's not alone with all this Astro agony.
They have to win today, or my life is together.
My wife's thinking the same thing. Thank you, Ralph, very much.
Anytime, Kevin.
We'll be back to finish out the first hour next. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you about our ultimate tailgate giveaway. You could win an Old Smoky Grill, $500 specialty meat gift card, box cooler, 4 Kodiak tumblers, 4 tailgate chairs, a pair of tickets to both UL and LSU football games, and a $500 Visa gift card. All brought to you by St. Landry Lumber, but you can't win if you don't join, so go to 1037thegame.com. Put you in to win this incredible ultimate tailgate giveaway brought to you by St. Landry Lumber. All right. From everything Ralph said, I hope he's right about just about everything he said. Because, see, Ralph and I are a little different. Like, we both followed the Saints. I haven't known him for very long, but I've read and listened to him. He's a little bit more normally on the negative side than me most of the time. But he and I are thinking very similar as I ask him all these questions on a lot of these issues. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Like the Shai Tuttle thing, I'm worried about. Not just because I think Shai Tuttle, well, first of all, it's one of the great names in Saints history. And so I love having a pretty good play. I'm a little worried about him. I've been a lot more worried about, I wasn't worried at all about Brian Poole, but no anything real positive about him. And he seems pretty confident in Poole. And I like the idea that Poole's a veteran and that he will help them in game situations. So I hope he's right about Poole. And, you know, he and I are the same about Ian Book. Now, I'm not nearly as down on Traquan as Ralph is and a lot of other people are. And maybe I'm just in total la-la land here. It's possible. I've been accused of that a lot lately, being in total la-la land. But I think he's healthy. We'll be okay. We'll be fine and have his best season. But I am really more every day thinking that this two-quarterback system thing is going to happen. And we need to prepare our minds for that. And Ralph agrees. Scary. But you know what? It might be crazy enough to work. That'll do it for the first hour. Another hour to follow. 103.7 The Game.
Broadcasting live from the Delta Media Studios in Upper Lafayette. 2 hours of sports talk like none other. Footnotes with your host, Kevin Foote.
Welcome back to Footnotes, Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Broadcasting live from the First South Farm Bureau simulcast on Stadium 32.3, 133 on LUS Fiber. Phone number 706-0111, 706-0111. This will be the time to get in. We'll be talking fantasy football in the next two segments with the guru. So quarterbacks is the primary topic of conversation today. We did running backs and receivers, and we're going to do quarterbacks. And I know that they held the first 103.7 The Game football draft last night, is my understanding anyway. And so there'll be one again the next couple weeks, well, the next 3 weeks, each Wednesday at Twin Peaks on Johnson Street. So for those of you who might have already drafted or you have another draft, I've got one Sunday, and then I've got another one, I think somewhere around Labor Day. And so we will, you know, and again, even if you're not in fantasy, now, you know, there's fantasy and there's real football. Some is over and a lot of it doesn't. But even if you're not into fantasy, but you're an NFL fan, I still think the conversation is very relevant because we're just analyzing who we think is going to have a big year, how they fit in, who's not going to have it. Now, there are a few fanfic issues that really have nothing to do with real football, but a lot of it crosses over. So try to make that point and remind myself and y'all about that issue. All right. So, again, if you want to get in, talk about the Astros or the Saints or any Major League Baseball team you're following or Cajuns and the Tigers. And again, we're getting little snippets here and there. We talked quite a bit of Cajun football yesterday. I heard some LSU football. You know, one of the most interesting things, maybe the most interesting thing for me that I've heard, not so much just about LSU, but about SEC football. And I did, when I kind of did a little bit of a very quick glance at a lot of the teams in the SEC, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, whenever that was, it seems like there's not a ton of, like, great quarterback situations or experienced seasoned quarterback situations. So I've heard the thought process floated out there, and it made sense that the SEC this year might be more like the SEC and not like the Big 12. You buy that, Nick? That it's going to be more like the SEC this year. SEC has turned into the Big 12, just a better version of it.
Yeah, just better.
And I think it's sickening, but... but do you do? I kind of think it might be a little more like the SEC this year.
It's possible. Georgia's top two pass catchers are going to be out for the first like 4 weeks of the season, so that's not good news.
But Georgia's always been a running. It's running back. You,
yeah. They've been running the ball. I don't know. See, I just don't know if I don't buy it necessarily yet because there's so many great wide receivers still in the game, and someone's going to step up. And I just think that at the end of the day, it's an experienced talent. It's talent nonetheless. Because Tua, while it was the national championship game and it was a big deal, he was very inexperienced going into his first year as a starter, and he lit the world on fire. So I don't know. I don't necessarily know if I completely buy the, well, because there's inexperienced quarterback play or new quarterback play, that there's going to be more of an emphasis on the run game necessarily. I just think that we just don't know how good those talented quarterbacks are yet.
And I mean, I think the running game is part of that, but I also think the defense are just going to have more success.
Oh, yes. I think the defenses are going to be better for most of the teams. LSU and Georgia especially.
And Alabama's, supposedly Alabama, mark. Too, from what you hear, that their defense is going to be better than it
was.
Yeah,
their defense is going to be better. Their linebacking corps is, yeah.
And so, now, you know, Ole Miss is not going to play that way. But I'm talking the teams that used to be SEC teams and not Big 12 teams.
Yeah, you may see a little better play. I think that's the better way to put it. Better play, not so much work play or more running the ball.
I think that I would like that better. I don't like what I call 42-40 games. I know some people love it. You know, to me, the perfect score of a football game is 24-23. And again, if my team wins, I don't really care. Like I always say, I don't care if they win 2-0. In fact, I would like to win 2-0 on a cheat. But especially, you know, the Saints this year. But I 20-something to 20-something and 40-something, 50-40 and all that.
Well, I'm not so much a score person. Like, it has to be like 42-40 game, because I've seen bad games that are 42-40. I've seen great games that are 20-17. It's all about pace of play, really, when it comes to like scores and stuff like that. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I like strategy. I like not so much bad. I don't like bad defense as it is. I like good offense that's just beating a good defense so much.
I agree. So we'll see how that. Again, if you have any, so whether it's Cajuns or LSU or anything to do with baseball or football, this is to give us a call today, 706-0111. We don't have a lot of heavy interview days, but we have them here and there. And so today is one of them. So if you would like to get in, feel free to do that. I do want to remind myself and y'all of some things. A lot of these tryouts obviously we're talking about the Saints, but it could be any NFL team. Some of these tryouts are by necessity, and some of them are more routine. This guy Mills, they tried out yesterday and brought on for a look. They're not bringing a young guy, unproven guy from North Carolina Central to challenge Ken Crawley to start at cornerback. It's not the same conversation. Now, they might like him, and they might say, okay, well, we're intrigued by this guy. He might make, if it really works out well, his ceiling is probably the practice squad. And again, they might have done Janoris Jenkins was still here. So, not all of, like, some of them are like, okay, we got an issue and we got to bring some people in here, or we got an injury, or we have bad play at this position. But I think some of these tryouts, especially younger guys like Mills, are routine. You try out people all the time anyway. Like, you see some guy on film that gets cut, you bring him in, you see what he looks like, and you might try to, you know, keep him for the future, not so much for just, oh no, he's like, Mills is coming in to try to sack. So they're not going to tell which, but some of them you can just kind of deduce it by who they are and what their experience level is and that kind of stuff. So keep in mind, not every tryout is out of this exclamation point, serious issues and an emergency kind of a situation. Some of it's just routine stuff that all teams do. You know, I hope the only thing that Ralph said that I probably don't wholeheartedly support, I don't think the Saints wide receiver situation is good. I don't. But has it ever been good is the question. Like, the Saints never had depth at wide receiver. And again, get me to 3-3. I do not have any problem with this depth chart at wide receiver. Michael Thomas, 8 weeks from now, whenever that's going to be. Michael Thomas, Traquan Smith, Deontay Harris, Callaway. You know, and whoever, you know, Humphrey or whoever fills out that group. I mean, I don't know who's going to fill it out by then. Injuries or whatever. The Saints have never had... If Cal is what we think he is, and if a healthy Harris is what we think he is, or most of us think, and Plastic Man can go back to being Plastic Man, And Traquan just does what he did last year. And I think he's going to be a little better. But even if he just does, when have the Saints ever had deeper wide receivers than that? Now, again, you got to get to that point, which is a big reason why I keep saying, get me to 3-3. Get me to 3-3. That's, but if they can get to 3-3, and then that becomes their depth chart, I got no issues with that as a depth chart. None. I don't think it's great, but the Saints have never had an elite receiving core, ever. All right, let's go to the phone line before we get to the break and talk to John. Hello.
Yeah, hey, Foot. How you doing this morning?
I'm trying. The Astros are killing me, but I'm trying.
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener. Just wanted to let you know the Astros are playing more like asteroids these days. I just wanted to. I can't believe how much they play the lower competition than what they have on their roster. And just wondering what you thought of the ability of them doing a little bit better against the Mariners coming up. And also, I'm going to the Jacksonville Saints game on Monday night.
Wow.
Was wondering, being the second game of the three-game preseason, what you thought of seeing more of the starters in that game.
All right, thanks for the call. Well, they've owned the Mariners for a long time. When the Astros were terrible, historically bad, they always seem to play well against Seattle. So I'm hoping they wake up. So, yeah, I feel a little better about that series than I did this Royals series. So we'll see. I think the starters, there'll be a fair amount. I think try to get in. So I would think you'd see a few more starters. Look, I don't ever need to see Ramczyk and Armstead in the game. I'm good with that. But I would think you'd see a few more starters. And like Ralph said, Jacksonville's not as good as Baltimore, but Baltimore sat a lot of starters. So I think you're going to have a hungrier, more starters Jacksonville team might be a better test and even a more of a true test than what we saw on the line of scrimmage. So I think that'll be a fun game to go to as preseason games go really hard. And I appreciate that phone call from a new caller. And we'll come back, talk fantasy football with the guru next. 103.7 The Game. To our special guest, talk fantasy football with the guru. Want to remind you, our website, 1037thegame.com. Put yourself in position to win a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. But you can't win if you don't join. So go to the website, 1037thegame.com. Join the Clubhouse Rewards. You might win a $50 gift certificate to Half Shell Oyster House. All right, time to talk fantasy football with the guru.
Needing help with your fantasy football matchup?
Help!
Not to worry. Kevin Foote is here to help you, and he's brought along his own personal guru, Spencer.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
Here is Sit 'em or Start 'em with On Footnotes.
Welcome. That clip is Lawrence Taylor, guru. Lawrence Taylor played linebacker, and it made me think. The very first time I ever did fantasy football was in 1986, and we did it. We did it like rotisserie baseball was, because we had did rotisserie baseball in 86, so it might have been 87, but anyway. We actually drafted defensive players. Like, we drafted defensive linemen, linebackers, and we had all the defensive stats in a rotisserie deal, just like you did like you do in baseball. We had offensive stats and we had defensive stats. Turnovers, interceptions, tackles, forced fumbles, whatever the eight categories were. What about that? I'm surprised people don't do that now.
Trendsetters as far as bringing in defensive player, that's something that people are doing these days to some degree. It hadn't caught on mainstream, but they had a rotisserie thing though. I'm the first I've ever heard of that. And for football, anyway.
Football, yeah. Instead of all this it. Well, what happened was the trophy era that stuff was out, but you have to earn it that way. But anyway, I still remember was Andre Tippett, my number one. I think my first defensive player pick that year. I don't remember many of my players, but I do remember I drafted Patriots linebacker Andre Tippett. That was back when they had beautiful uniforms instead of that USFL junk they wear now. All right. So tell me, you know, we're talking about quarterback and craziness. You know, to me, the quarterback crop this year, a lot of uncertainty. I much prefer the wide receiver and running back crop to the quarterback crop in terms of depth and feeling like you know what you're doing. First, let's start with this. What quarterbacks would you think anyone should consider picking in the first round if picking a first round quarterback with a lot of people? I get that.
I got you. So basically, yeah, the only leagues I'd take quarterbacks in the first would be 2QB, where you have to start two, or super flex, where you can flex a quarterback. And those would be, I'd probably say the four in the tier one for me would be Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, and Lamar Jackson. I feel like they're all elite for fantasy. Mahomes and Allen because of their cannon arms, and they can run a little bit. Allen, he scaled back on running some, but he's enough of an elite passer to where he's up there. And then Murray and Jackson, Murray's improving as a passer, might not run quite as much this year. He's definitely in that discussion. And then Lamar, while he's probably will never be an elite passer, he's definitely an elite runner, enough of a runner to where he's up there with those guys. So after those four, I'd probably say the rest, like guys like Wilson, Herbert, Prescott, they're probably better suited for the second round in that kind of format.
All right, so why does this mean that you're convinced that Aaron Rodgers is going to have a bad year? Because guys with egos like Aaron Rodgers, who did all these shenanigans in the offseason, it seems like he's going to want to have a chip on his shoulder. So you are you convinced he's going to have a down year by his standards?
No, I don't think he'll have a down year. I don't think it's last year, though. It'd be hard to do much better than last year. I don't think his touchdowns especially, I think because his yards, I mean, he threw for a lot, but I think he could repeat that total. His touchdowns, though, he was just, I mean, I think like Robert Tonyan, for example, we get to tight ends next week. He's do a little bit of a bust candidate for me because I feel like any player that's dependent on touchdowns is due for a regression because touchdowns come and go a lot of times. Some guys are like Devontae Adams, I'm not worried about him. Digit touchdowns, but I mean, outside of him, Green Bay's, I think they're due for a little bit of regression. I don't think they'll be quite as explosive as last year. And I think Rodgers, he'll have a chip on his shoulder, but it's also going to be a thing. It might be a little more tension there with him and LaFleur and all that. Like, I don't think things will go quite as smoothly for him this year. So I still have him in tier two. I have him. To me, the tier two quarterbacks would be him, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, and Justin Herbert. But he'd probably be number eight overall. But his eight on as much as he used to. So, yeah, not as some.
All right. So you made me think of something else I wanted to ask you. In all the leagues that you're in, see, years ago when we started after we did the finish with the rotisserie stuff, because I didn't last very long where we went to just offensive players like the rest of the country was doing. But we used to where you didn't get as many you didn't get as many points for throwing one of these cheesy little 2-yard touchdown passes like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers do all the time. You didn't get as much for that as you did for 30 yards or for 40 yards. Any leagues are all touchdowns the same?
Oh, and in some leagues now they make passing touchdowns not as much. Like a lot of leagues, passing touchdowns are only either 4 points. So then I think they did that as a result of those, you know, the quarterbacks getting so many cheap touchdowns as he brought up, like with Rodgers and Brady. So yeah, that's catching on. And in those leagues, it's getting to the point, though, to where the quarterbacks are becoming not as valuable because they don't get as many for the passing touchdowns. And if you only have to start one quarterback. All of that is quarterbacks are slipping big time and dry. I always preach, don't reach on a back, especially if your settings are like that, because then it, there's not as much difference between the elite back and the not as good quarterback. So it becomes a deal to where I'd rather, you know, stack my running back and receiver depth than reach on a quarterback, because with that setting, you can stream a quarterback each week needed and not have it affect you that way. You can't really stream running backs. I mean, there's only so many running backs to go around, and you usually have to stream sometimes three if you have to flex one. So, yeah, I'm I usually say to don't reach on the quarterback if your settings aren't 6 points per passing touchdown.
All right. Kyler Murray, you mentioned. Kyler Murray, like a lot of people last year, got off to this great start, and he really struggled down the stretch. Now, a lot of it was health-related. Why am I to believe that's not going to happen again?
I don't think he's going to run quite as much this year. I really don't. I think he's their franchise player, so I definitely think they're going to scale him. But the good news is I think he'll be improved as a passer. It'll be his third year in the league. For example, it was his third year last year. It took a big leap as a passer. I'm not saying Kyler's going to take that big of a leap, but he'll definitely take a step forward in that regard to make up for the rushing that he doesn't get, you know, because last year he was on a torrid rushing pace. I think he was on pace for like 1,000 yards, and then he got hurt. But he's not really built for that. He's not really like a big type quarterback. He's more of like the finesse type. He's a good runner, but he's like kind of quick. Like, he's not one that's going to, you know, he's not really built to take a lot of contact. So I think if he can run smart, not run quite as much, also improve as a passer, he'll be just fine. I'm not quite as high on him, though. You're banking on an improvement, which isn't always guaranteed. I mean, where, you know, with Mahomes and Allen, you know, they're elite passers. Like, you already know that going in. And they'll get us some goal line carries to top it off. So, yeah, I'm in the slight edge, but Kyler Murray is, he's in the discussion. He's the real deal.
Russell Wilson, new offensive coordinator, new scheme. You know, he started out great, did terrible. A lot of it had to do with with scheme issues, I think, and philosophical differences. So which Russell Wilson do you expect to happen most of this season?
I think we'll mainly get the good version, because they have a new offensive coordinator this year that I think they'll be able to bridge a lot of that philosophical gap there. I think he'll be a little more on the same page. While Pete Carroll, they're always going to want to run a lot under Pete Carroll, which caps Russ's upside to some degree, but I feel like he'll be more consistent this year. And well, I don't think he'll, I mean, they got off to that ridiculous start last year. I think he'll just be more steady this year, if I had to guess. And he's, honestly, to me, a lot of people view him as a risk because he struggled so bad down the stretch. He's been so consistent throughout his career. He's at a prime age, you know, early 30s. That's usually when quarterbacks are very, you know, they're very dependable at that point. So he still runs a good amount. I think he's still borderline top five quarterback, definitely top 10. He's a very safe pick, in my opinion. I'd almost rather.
All right, one more question before we get to the break. Justin Herbert, it was impossible to not be impressed and just wowed by what he did last year. Is there any way there's any amount of fool's gold there? Like, what scenario, besides injury, what scenario could be there that where there was some fool and he could have tricked us last year?
I don't think there was too much fool's gold there, honestly. I was getting into that thinking, like, oh, this is his second year. He's bound for a sophomore slump, you know. And I couldn't really find any evidence of that. So I was like, man, I'm still drafting him high. I was like, I don't really feel like there's no real evidence. I mean, to me, last year, his year was very, very legit. You know, it passed the eye test and the test. I mean, everything seemed on the up and up. And I know the only thing is the Chargers charge a whole lot of weapons, so that's a little concerning. But it didn't seem like a real thing. They they lost Hunter Henry and added Jared Cook, which, I mean, I don't think that's a huge difference there. So I don't think he'll be quite up there with the Mahomes and Allens of the world, but he's definitely. And he's an elite quarterback in the making, and I don't see him taking much of a step back. I think he'll be right up there as one of the top 10, maybe even top 5 quarterbacks.
All right, we'll take a commercial break. Come back and talk more quarterback, fantasy quarterback talk with the guru next at 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to Footnotes. Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, it is Thursday. On Saturday, we'll be more great local programming starting here with First Cup presented by Bailey Cigar Room from 8 to 10. Remember, there's a new time for First Cup with the professor from 8 to 10. And that will be followed from 10 to 12 by Under the Dome with CD. Hopefully the Astros, like, win one game between now and then at least. We'll see. But, again, don't forget, great local programming right here at 103.7 The Game from 8 to noon on Saturday morning. All right. We talked about first-rounders. All right, Guru, tell me about the rookies that you would consider taking and maybe rookies that you would just prefer to stay away from.
As far as QBs?
Yes.
They got five, you know, guys that are first rounders at quarterback coming in that will likely see time starting this year. You know, Trevor Lawrence, Trey Lance, Zach Wilson, and Mac Jones. I'll just get the two. I'm staying away from out of the way. You know, Zach Wilson and Mac Jones, definitely not touching either of them. Wilson, with a new system with the Jets, feel like it's just too risky to take a chance on him. Jones, we don't know when he'll be the starter, and the Patriots are very conservative on defense. Those I'm targeting, though, you know, Trevor Lawrence and Trey Lance, I'm very much targeting. You know, I feel like Lawrence, I don't buy all this Gardner Minshew stuff. I mean, I'm not a Minshew hater like you, Kevin, but I don't think that he's got any chance against Trevor Lawrence. Like, I mean, he's not anywhere close to being a quarterback.
Gardner Minshew is terrible, but go ahead.
Yeah, compared to Trevor Lawrence, he's probably kind of terrible. I mean, Trevor Lawrence is a generational talent. I mean, not many could compare with him, so he's going to start. I think he'll do really well there because they got DJ Chark, Marvin Jones, Laviska Shenault, Etienne. I mean, James Robinson, a solid run game. I mean, shoot, they've got the pieces. They've got the pieces. The only thing they're really missing is a tight end. I mean, but they could get somebody to do that. Their boy Tebow didn't pan out, but shoot, they've got stuff there. So I'm not at all doubting Trevor. Some people are doubting him, saying the O-line might not be good enough. But I don't think the Jacksonville O-line's as much of a dumpster fire as, like, Cincinnati. So I think Lawrence will be very good. And then Lance, I feel like, will be very good as well. The only catch with Lance is he probably won't start week one. He'll probably have to week before he'll start. So definitely don't take him as your starter, but he makes for a very good backup. And if your starter would get hurt in the middle of the year and Trey Lance is starting, and he's an immediate plug and play because he's a dual threat. He's going to run a lot too, which makes him very appealing, especially in that Kyle Shanahan offense where you know they're going to score a lot of points. Fields is a little trickier. I'm not anti-Fields per se, but I'm also not all in on Fields like some. A lot of people are like, oh, Justin Fields, you got to have him for your fantasy team. I'm not necessarily buying it, though, because, I mean, shoot, when's the last time a Bears quarterback succeeded? Sid Luckman back in the 50 years ago? I mean, it's like they never – I mean, Chicago is just not a quarterback hotspot. Well, I think Fields could be the best one they've had. I just don't think he's going to come in as a rookie like gangbusters. I don't see him putting up big numbers as a rookie. He'll run some. He might have some weeks where he could be a streaming option, but I don't think I'd target him on draft day.
Now, your boy Lance is going to have to do better than 5 for 14 passing to earn any quarterback time.
Yeah, that was a tad concerning, but the good thing with him is even if he is a little inaccurate to start, he's going to hit a lot of big plays. He's one of those big arms. Kind of like whenever Josh Allen came into the league, he was pretty inaccurate, but he ran a lot and hit some big plays where even he was still fantasy relevant even through his, you know, inaccuracies. So I think with that, Lance will still be a solid fantasy option. I mean, shoot, look at Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts is in the discussion to be a top 10 quarterback for fantasy. I know he had mentioned earlier in the show about fantasy and real life. That Hurts is an example of how the two don't always coincide, because for real life, Jalen Hurts stinks. I mean, Jalen Hurts is like, that's, you don't want him as your quarterback in real life. But for fantasy, I mean, if he's running a lot, if even if he's not a great with those rushing yards, I mean, those rushing yards and carries can really mask a quarterback that's not a good passer. I mean,
you know, Jalen Hurts to me is one of the more fascinating quarterbacks to analyze going into the drafts, because I've seen probably a difference of opinion, a bigger difference of opinion on him in different fantasy publications and things you read online, because some people are terrible. That is that, you know, he's inexpolished. Part of it is the receiving core situation in Philly's been a train wreck for the last 2 or 3 years. And you know, you're hearing good stuff about this Watkins no-name guy and about Rieger maybe getting a little bit of trust in any of that. And then other people think because of the running that he's good. I think I would do.
Yeah, I probably would too, honestly. It's just a little too risky because, yeah, he'll have some good weeks with his rushing, but I feel like in the weeks he's not running, he's going to kill you because he doesn't offer you that stable floor of passing. So, I mean, if he has a week where they're behind and he doesn't run as much, yeah, he could really sink you. So, yeah, I'm not really recommending him. Because if you do get him drafted, you know, I wouldn't mind like a duo like him and Trevor or something, but I wouldn't recommend just drafting him. If you draft him, definitely have a backup ready to go.
All right. Which old quarterback would you pick before the other one? Ben Roethlisberger or Matt Ryan?
Definitely Matt Ryan. Because, I mean, Matt Ryan is getting older, but he's not to the point of Big Ben. I think he has about 3 or 4 years left in the tank. Not necessarily elite play, but I still think he'll be at a solid level. I mean, we know Atlanta likes to sling it. I mean, I think he doesn't run, so that hurts him somewhat. But I mean, he is very consistent. I like him as a backup type option. The thing with Big Ben, I just feel like Big Ben is literally at the end of the road. I mean, Matt Ryan will be 36. I mean, I think he could play till he's 40. Big Ben is approaching 40, and Big Ben's had way more injury concerns throughout his career than Matt Ryan. I mean, he had that made in 2019. He came back last year and didn't really look himself. He did okay, but he just, I don't know, he just wasn't quite himself, and I don't think he'll ever get back to where he was a really good QB. So I think he's somebody I don't even know if he's a top – I don't think he's even a top 20 quarterback anymore. I think he's more of like somebody you only look at in those super flex leagues. Or Matt Ryan, I still think could have a lot of appeal this season, especially in good matchups.
A lot of us do not like or, you know, make fun of Kirk Cousins, but he's got a lot of weapons on his team. A lot of people are high on Irv Smith to have a good year at tight end. He's already got good receivers, and he's got, you know, arguably the best running back in the NFL behind him. So what about, you know, Kirk Cousins had a pretty good fantasy year last year. Now he's having all these issues, and the Vikings preseason's been one of the train wreck preseasons in the league. But how high do you have him?
Not that high, honestly. I think he'll regress some this year because I feel like the Vikings defense was so bad. I feel like it's got to be a little better this year. I don't think it's going to be a total train wreck like last year. So with that in mind, I don't think Cousins will put up the kind of statistics he did last year. They were behind a lot, so he was having to sling, and he threw for over 4,000, over 30 touchdowns. He's kind of similar to Matt Ryan to me, except with in Atlanta, it's like we already know Atlanta's going to have a bad defense. That's just, they just, I don't know, they just never can seem to get things right on that side of the ball. Where with Minnesota, I feel like, I don't think they'll get back to the way they used to be on defense, but I think they'll be somewhat improved. Or I don't think Cousins will be having to throw as much, and as a result, his numbers for fantasy won't be as good. And he's another one that doesn't really run much, so it's, yeah, I'm personally not, because I mean, he's got Jefferson and Thielen, and Irv Smith should do well. I really Smith, but there, that's another team I would say about the Saints not having receiver depth. Minnesota's another one. It's like they never have receiver depth. It's like they have their top two, and that's it. Not really a Kirk Cousins truther.
All right, give me one or two names of quarterbacks that most people do not have ranked in the top, 15 or so, that you think are going to make the biggest jump and have the best season this year, that most will have, that most will consider a big surprise.
I gotcha. Yeah, one I'd say would be, Trey Lance. Obviously, I'm very much high on Trey Lance. I think he'll do well once he wins the job. And we talked about him a lot already. I'm trying to think of another one that I think could really make that jump. I mean, there's kind of, outside of Trey Lance, the two that come to mind to me, one of them will make Troy Thibodeau happy, and that's Tua Tagovailoa. I feel like Tua could make the jump, considering they added a lot of new weapons for him. If he's actually healthy now, I know he's had a lot of health concerns early on in his career, but if he could ever be healthy, shoot, he could make that jump and be a strong fantasy option. You know, Jalen Waddle and Will Fuller, if he's able to sling it down the field, those guys, that could be a really explosive passing attack potentially. And the other one for me would be Ryan Fitzpatrick, a.k.a. Fitzmagic. I feel like Washington is like, they're really believing in him. It's very rare that throughout his career, he's been a journeyman. He's getting up in age, but it seems like Washington is they're believing in him as their starter, which is something that he's not really had much. He's had the fight and claw for every opportunity. But I think with Washington, that's a good system there with Ryan. Weapons. I think he might be poised to have a career year. I know it's hard to trust somebody that's been on a million different teams and is almost 40 years old, but I think Fitzmagic could actually be somebody that could have a, because he throws it. He's a gunslinger, and he even can run a little bit. Shoot, he's a guy that can kind of sneak in. So yeah, I'd say it's hard to find much down below. Maybe Sam Darnold, but it's just, the way his car's hard to trust. And he is in a new system, though, so it could pan out. And then whoever wins the Saints' job, they could have upside, but I don't think they'll. I don't know. Will they keep the job? Will they rotate quarterback? I personally wouldn't go there for fantasy, but they do have some guys late. Definitely the top guys if you can, but they do have some options late. There's some depth.
There are two quarterbacks that nobody thinks anything of that are just loaded with talent. One of them is Sam Darnold, and the other one is Drew Locke. And I'm just telling you, the Broncos are loaded with talent around them. And if he figures it out, he could go way higher than 15. We'll see how that plays out. I know you hate the man, but I'm just telling you, they are
he might
loaded.
Not even win the job.
They are loaded with talent. Hey, Goody, I appreciate get to tight ends and some more other kind of issues with fantasy football next week. I appreciate it. Thanks, Spence.
Yeah, no problem. Sounds good.
Tune in next Thursday for another edition of Stardom or Sit'em with the Guru here on.
We'll be back. Welcome back. Footnotes, Kevin Foote on 103.7 The Game. Want to remind you, go to the website, 103.7thegame.com, and put yourself in a position to win one of two Cypress Bayou gift certificates. You could win a $150 gift certificate to Mr. Lester Steakhouse or a $25 gift certificate to Mabel's Kitchen, all at Cypress Bayou. But you can't win if you don't go to the website and join the clubhouse. Rewards Club, so go to 1037thegame.com today and do so. All right. No, I think it's a very iffy quarterback group. Like Like, the guru's high on Trey Lance, but you just don't know when he's going to win the job. And a lot of people think they're going to trade Garoppolo. I think that's going to happen. Not yet. We'll see. But you got that situation. Don't know what to think of it. Broncos situation, to Guru's point. I mean, I guess it's possible Bridgewater's going to win the job. I don't think he's going to win the job. I think Locke's going to win the job. And I think Locke has a lot of upside. I know I'm very much in the minority there. But when you have – now, if he played with a bad offense, he played with the Bears, he wouldn't have any upside. But when you have a big, giant arm, if you improve at all mentally and you've got running backs, wide receivers all over the place, it's hard not to play well. It's a team game, but, man, he's got a lot of talent around him. So, you know, Goff, what is he going to do? There's so many guys you just don't need here for quarterbacks. It'll be interesting to see how that pans out. All right, thank you for getting me through a rough day. A nice one.